The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It has been a torrid couple of weeks for Children's Health Ireland, the organisation responsible for running the children's hospitals in Ireland, and ultimately the organisation that will be responsible for taking control of the new children's hospital when that is finally built. There have been questions about the quality of governance and the culture within the organisations. There have been questions about controls in terms of the appropriateness of surgeries. There have been questions raised about use of the National Treatment Purchased Fund and whether or not that was appropriate or whether or not it was profit-making for medics within the organisation. I'm joined by Jennifer Carroll McNeill, the Minister for Health. Minister, first of all, you're very welcome. Can I start with the internal report done by CHI into much of this? That report has yet to be published, though I get the sense that everybody in the system is pressuring for it to be published. Have you a good reason as to why it hasn't been?
Well, I can tell you the reason that I have not published it, which is because I have no legal basis to publish it. And I checked with the Attorney General. I do hold strongly the view that it should be published in the broader public interest. The reason that I believe it hasn't, and I really do recognise this for CHI, is this was an internal human resources type report going into some very serious cultural issues. And the people who participated in it, nurses, junior doctors and so on, they participated in it on that basis in a confidential way. And the report, which of course I have read, does reflect some of the things that they say, and some of them, you know, they would be identifiable. So in the normal course, you'd never publish something like that. But the issues in this are of such seriousness that in the broader public interest, a version of it must be published. And I know that CHI are reflecting on how to do that so as to publish the maximum that sets the context for what happened, you know, recognising, of course, that many journalists have this report. But from CHI's perspective, to publish it responsibly, that tells the maximum story behind it and the steps of what has been taken next. I do expect that to be published because the broader public interest very clearly requires it.
Have they given you an indication as to when?
I suspect it will be this week. I think it's important that they try and make sure that individuals are protected. And I don't necessarily mean some of the consultants. I do mean some of the people who might have given descriptions about what they were feeling and perhaps some of the pressures that they felt. And I think it's very important that you protect those people appropriately.
Can I ask therefore about the relationship that is evident then, the structural relationship, the governance relationship between CHI, the department and yourself? Because I think some people will have looked at the minister being unable to compel an agency responsible for the delivery of a large chunk of our health system to do what you wanted them to do, in this instance, publish that report. Is that system functioning where there is that unusual, I think almost unique relationship between CHI and the parent department?
Yeah, I think I certainly, as a new Minister for Health, I have a lot of questions about hospital governance generally. You know, Ireland is a small country. It's 5.5 million people. We spend a very significant amount of our taxpayers' money on health, quite appropriately, but we need to make sure that we're getting the best value for that. Within that, we have quite a number of different hospital structures and governance structures. So you've got HSE hospitals, like Waterford, for example, where I was yesterday, a phenomenally well-run hospital, let me tell you. We've got CHI, which is a different statutory creation. And then you've got all of these Section 38 hospitals, your Vincent's, your Mater, where they have their own board and governance, but ultimately are funded pretty much entirely by the state. Then you've got maternity hospitals, which have this master structure. And they're all very different and they're all very disparate. And, you know, it's probably not the best way of organising things for such a small country. But I think in particular, if you look at CHI and why was that created? It was created because you had two children's hospitals and Talla, but really two primary children's hospitals that came from different historical backgrounds, Temple Street and Crumlin, connected to two different hospitals, the Mater and James's, run by religious orders. And they were, you know, my understanding is that they were just so far apart from each other, there wasn't a cohesive children's system. And the effort at that time, starting back in 2013, was to create a single entity that would start to bring those hospitals together. That was CHI. That has done that and has brought it to a certain point. There's no question about that. But I do think that there's very much more work to be done to integrate a single paediatric system. Can I reiterate? We are a small country. One single paediatric system is obviously more than enough that works like clockwork together in
but
synergy.
But can I ask then, in that context, if what you had was a job to get together effectively two separate hospitals and amalgamate them in a functional manner, You're now at another Rubicon, which is the creation of the National Children's Hospital. You have a report from KPMG that says that the operational standards and that the culture within CHI is not something on which you would want to put an awful lot of pressure or much investment. Is it appropriate that they get handed the Children's Hospital, or is now the opportunity to do something completely different?
I think we'll be reflecting on that sort of policy structure over the next year. My first concern is that the Children's Hospital is opened and that it's commissioned and that I get the earliest possible access to it from the contractor. And I think we can discuss more about that. The second thing is that CHI has to continue to function every single day. And can I just say, I mean, there's 140 consultants in CHI. We're talking about issues that have been created from a very small proportion. I am a parent of a child in CHI. Many, many others are. And they know that it's a very good service. It's very, very functional. But that doesn't mean we don't need to get deep into these problem areas. So as minister, my responsibility is to make sure that we're seeing the hospital open and we're continuing to see the functional the functionality of children's, of paediatric health services. That being said, you might have noticed that I put HSE board members on as board members of CHI. I do have a number of vacancies which I think will need to be filled. And I think we will reflect on that in policy terms over the next number of months and keep a sort of a steady focus on the delivery of services, the implementation of reforms where they need to happen, and planning for the Children's Hospital. But I am watching and managing this very carefully from a medium-term policy perspective.
But reading between the lines, I get the sense that you have a situation where you have an entity which is not necessarily strategically fit for purpose. And you have a situation where you are co-locating between an adult hospital deliberately because of the advantages of co-location. It would seem odd to have two separate parent structures in that combined hospital.
Well, yes, but even, you know, for example, were CHI to move to where HSE, which is something that's been the discussion in the Dáil, that then James's is still a separate structure, a Section 38 structure. I have to say, you know, I don't understand the level, the disparateness in the hospital structures and the governance structures. The state funds health in Ireland. It really does. And, you know, in every way, I want to drive to an efficient, publicly funded public health system. Within some of the Section 38 hospitals, particularly the teaching university hospitals, I think there's an opportunity to further drive innovation, real skills, real, you know, real teaching and learning, and really foster that academic relationship even harder. And I think that's a phenomenal opportunity that we need to drive further on. Like, for example, I was with the Dublin Neurological Institute that's based in the Mater last night. I was at the LAM Research Institute, actually, which is in Galway, which is a HSE hospital. But, you know, there's a great opportunity there. But these historical arrangements, these historical voluntary hospitals and so on, I understand where they've come from. But is that the situation that we should be in 50 years' time? I think it's worth reflecting more broadly on hospital governance, but not about ownership, really more about service delivery. So, for example, you know that I want to make sure that we have a 7-day hospital system. We have a public-only consultant contract, which 64% of consultants have now signed. It will end up that, you know, we're nearly at 100%. You know, take a 20-year view. We've got to make sure that we have the structures in place to make sure that we're getting the best value. So clinical directors, clinical lead specialists, and so that some of the hangovers of the past aren't stopping us getting to that 7-day system.
Hangovers of the past. One of those, surely at this point, has to be the National Treatment Purchase Fund, because this was created as a short-term stopgap measure to try to purchase treatment to alleviate waiting list pressures until those waiting list issues were resolved. We're now a quarter of a century on from that, and we discover allegations that the NTPF is being used in a way that is profit-making for medics rather than, and this is by the suggestions by a whistleblower, that medics have changed appointment times because it suited them financially. Has the time come to look at the NTPF in totality and say, let us eradicate that and deliver through a much more simple, coherent system?
I think, let me take the NTPF just slightly separate and let's talk about insourcing, because it's something of the same idea. It's about using funding for private capacity to meet public needs to try to address waiting lists and waiting times. And the reason that we do that, of course, is because we don't want people you know, suffering in pain, where we have the opportunity to make sure that they get treatment at an earlier stage. And of course, that's a good thing. But nevertheless, as we transition to a fully public system, you're right to identify there are some anomalies and some, not quite perversions, but, you know, opportunities to create perversions through this mix that we currently have. And we're not going to cut that off in one go, because that would impact patients, that would impact their quality of life. But we are definitely going to wean ourselves off that and move to a 7 day a week public system. So, for example,
without a national treatment purchase,
not necessarily. Let's just take these things steady. So the first piece in that is, because the National Treatment Purchase Fund also works for international pieces as well. So let's just, and we're a small country, there's a critical mass issue as well about where you're going to get the best treatment, but much more importantly, the insourcing issue. So I remember at the beginning of April, learning more and more about weekend activity in hospitals, because I kept asking, you know, what's the diagnostic situation on a Saturday? Why aren't people getting called for outpatient appointment clinics, whether it's 8 p.m. on a Thursday or 4 p.m. on a Saturday? I'm not routinely hearing this from my constituents or from the public at large. And I expect that to be the case, given that there's a contract there that nearly 70% of consultants have signed to work in those hours. So why isn't that happening? So I keep asking more and more, when does your CT machine run? What time does it finish running? Is it 5 p.m? Is it 8 p.m? Is it how long does it run on Saturday? And just not being happy enough with the answers. And I spoke with Bernard Gloucester, and he and I commissioned a complete audit of insourcing. What that means is buying in private capacity into the hospitals at weekend. And what are the structures around that? What list is it doing? And is it creating an impact on the productivity we would expect to see during the week in the public system? So he has done that complete audit, and I expect to see the results of that possibly, I'd say, in the next 2 to 3 weeks. To be fair, it's a big piece of work. Within that, a number of weeks later, I was notified about an NTPF issue in Beaumont. Now, I was having already commissioned this audit, I was aware that I was going to get good detailed information in relation to it. And of course, as you say, the NTPF issue then came up in relation to CHI. So there's no question but that this needs very serious and careful analysis.
And just to be clear, the issue with the NTPF in Beaumont is that this is the allegation that Beaumont Hospital was suspended from their treatment funding because of financial irregularities.
Well, I don't want to specify any reasons, but yes, the NTPF suspended funding. So I want to understand all of the reasons behind that. But yes, I mean, that's an important and significant thing. But as I say, I think the issue in relation to insourcing is important more broadly, not because of any malfeasance necessarily, but because of how it intersects with getting the best productivity within the public system. So they're two slightly different things, but we cannot have a fully public system and also be creating these other incentives. We cannot cut off these other incentives overnight because of the impact on patient care. But by God, we're going to be weaning ourselves off them.
What was your reaction when you began to do that analysis as a new minister? Because what you describe sounds like a jury-rigged, cobbled together set of ad hoc solutions on which something that should be systemic now depends.
I don't think I would go as far in describing it that way. What I think you have is people creating solutions to try to meet patients' needs. And if you can find a way to make sure that somebody gets an operation that they need more quickly, you know, you always do that. That is the public interest. I think, though, you have to take two steps back and say, well, is this the system that we want to allow continue for 20 years? No, clearly not. So how long are we going to take to wean ourselves off it? And how long and what steps are we now going to take to make sure that we are incentivizing public practice in public hospitals, funded by the state, funded by the taxpayer? And how are we going to transition ourselves off the previous system and towards this launch of care model of public, you know, public hospitals with excellent teaching university hospitals, at, you know, in the middle of that also? So I wouldn't describe it in the same way as you, Anton, but, you know, to be fair, you know, I understand why you say it.
A text asking, can you please ask the minister if she's still intent on bringing our hospitals to a 24/7 operation basis, as it's presently unacceptable Monday to Friday. Well, you've made clear your intent on making it a 7 day a week basis, 24/7.
But can I just say, though, some hospitals really are working in this way. Like, I was in Waterford yesterday. Their average trolleys this year is zero. Their average trolleys last year is zero. And the reason for that is not that they're cancelling elective surgeries. It's not anything. It's the whole of hospital management. Yesterday, I was in their flow room where they're tracking every patient coming into ED, every patient that can be discharged, whether that patient needs a CT or an MRI before they can be discharged, prioritising those, making sure that that happens, moving them out of the hospital, working with the community system more broadly to have places for people to go, recognising most people get discharged home, and watching the electives coming in and making sure that the electives are prioritised, that they happen also. And I just don't understand how Waterford, which wasn't in a great place in 2019, if I'm honest, with very poor hospital trolley figures, none of this management, how it can have turned itself around so structurally, and also beyond structurally, culturally, to make everybody in the hospital, from the hospital support staff to the IT division to the emergency department to the vascular surgeons, to absolutely everybody there is responsible for the emergency department. And managers were describing to me when they go up on a ward upstairs, way away from the emergency department, a first question that they'll be asked by a senior nurse is, how's ED today? Now, how can that happen? So, for example, then I look at other hospitals over the bank holiday weekends, and I've been tracking these numbers very, very carefully. And I might go into, for example, I went into Vincent's at 7:30 on a Monday evening of a bank holiday weekend. And I said, where's the consultant? They had just gone home. I was like, that's fine, but where's the next one? And there wasn't a consultant on that night on a bank holiday Monday. That is the exact pressure point when the numbers will flip. The trolley numbers will
now,
flip.
Where does responsibility for that lie? Because there is an implicit criticism there.
It lies with everybody. It lies with everybody.
That means it lies with nobody.
It doesn't. It lies with the hospital management. It lies with the clinical directors. But the difference in Waterford is it's a whole of hospital culture that has decided this is how we're going to do this together, and everybody is responsible for it. It's not fair to put pressure on the people who work in the emergency departments alone. That's just not fair.
But do you
because
see,
the rest of the hospital...
Do you see a manner in which what you are describing as the exemplar in Waterford can be...
Yes.
You do?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely I do. And it's my expectation that they should. And let me give you an example of why this is so important. And the last bank holiday weekend, the June bank holiday weekend, I tracked the numbers every 8 a.m, 2 p.m, 8 p.m, every single hospital in the country all weekend. Bernard Gloucester's texting me, giving me updates on what's expected. And we had really, really low figures all weekend. I went to bed on the Monday night of the bank holiday weekend and we'd only 142 people on trolleys. 142. It's so, so low. On the end of a bank holiday, when I woke up on Tuesday morning, it was 307. Now, would you please explain to me how that's possible and how that's acceptable? I don't think it's acceptable. So myself and Bernard and Robert Watt, we brought 8 hospitals in to describe to us exactly what had happened, because those 8 hospitals contributed 67% of those trolleys that weekend. It is management as much as it is resources. And many of the hospitals that did have very high trolley figures had more than, you know, have very considerable resources and have recruited very considerably.
That's a fairly stinging criticism of HSE management, isn't it?
But it's not necessarily HSE management alone. What I'm saying is it's hospital management and clinical management. And it's everybody's responsibility. And everybody's focus should be on making sure. Why is this important? Because patient safety, patient dignity, patient experience demands it.
One final thing. You mentioned we talked about the Children's Hospital and who would be responsible for it and how that structure would work. What about the actual arrival of it? BAM, the contractor, put out wrote to you during the week, feeling very sorry for themselves for the way they had been characterised in media. First of all, are they right? Are they getting an unfair treatment in the public eye? And secondly, when is this thing going to be open?
So the most recent information that I have in relation to the hospital development, and this disappoints me greatly, we set aside about 10 million euros a month to be drawn down to pay BAM and its contractors. My most recent understanding is that only 3 million is being drawn down a month. As a consequence, I have asked for an analysis of the number of contractors on site every week, going back to last November, when we had a sort of a number of about 800 to 900 staff per week on site. And I want to see how many staff have, because clearly they've been paid, so we're well able to, it should be well able to be tracked. So present to me the number of staff, contractors, BAM or other contractors on site every week since then. Because the amount of money that is provided to be paid to contractors each month has not been drawn down in the way that it should. So I'm saying that there's a figure of about 10 million a month. Only 3 million is being drawn down.
So it is your belief that the state has funded BAM sufficiently to deliver at a far greater speed, but they are not using that money to do so. Is that it?
Show me the contractor numbers, because hospitals can't get finished without people there to finish it. So the numbers that I have have raised serious questions for me. So I have asked for the number of contractors per week. And I imagine the Public Accounts Committee would ask a similar question. It seems perfectly reasonable.
Based on that, does it mean that you are unable to get a sense to get a specific date as to when the hospital will be open.
I have to have contractors on site for the hospital to get finished. Now, it is so close, Anton. You know, I mean, this process of finishing the hospital, getting early access, commissioning the hospital, it is so, so important. But come and see it. I mean, come and see it when you see how different this is to Temple Street and Crumlin and the experience that children and parents are going to have and whatever transitional difficulties and teething difficulties we have. And at the beginning of it, my goodness, it's just so different. You know that I have a parent who has spent a long, long time, the last 10 years in Crumlin and Temple Street with my beautiful young lad. I can't tell you from a parent's perspective and from a child's perspective how different this is going to be. And although I sit here as minister, you know, deeply frustrated at pace, wanting to get early access, wanting to get in, wanting to commission the hospital and getting it open and to do so in the best and safest way, I recognise that that's a temporary frustration and that this hospital is going to be transformative for the young children of Ireland now who might be in the system for some time.
Minister, thank you very much for your time this morning.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.